Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'm going to ask you three, at least two of you. Your little sister maybe won't. She's too shy. Some Krishna questions. Ready? How old was Krishna before he left Vrindavan to go to Mathura? How old was he? What was his age? Would you like to know? According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he was 11 years, 8 months. Not quite 12. Next question. There were two events that led to Krishna leaving Vrindavan and going to Mathura. What's one of those two events that happened preceding Krishna leaving Vrindavan and going to Mathura? Two important events. Should I give you a hint? One of them, the name starts with an N. He's a great sage. His last name is Muni. First name starts with an N. Narada Muni. Narada Muni. So what happened, we'll come to the second part. Narada Muni visited Kamsa for the second time. Kamsa was in Mathura, ruling and being mean. He visited Kamsa. Why did he visit Kamsa? Because Narada knew that he knew the sequence of Krishna's pastimes. And when his Vrindavan pastimes are over, he goes to Mathura and kills Kamsa. He knows his pastimes. So he went to Kamsa and informed Kamsa, "You want to know a secret? I'll tell you. The eighth child of Devaki, Vasudev tricked you. He took the eighth child of Devaki and placed the eighth child of Devaki in the care of Nanda and Yashoda, and his name is Krishna. You know, the eighth child of Devaki is supposed to kill you. So, Kamsa, you better protect your backside. Do the needful. You're smart. You know how to take care of yourself." "Oh, I'm going to kill Vasudev." No. Don't kill Vasudev. It's not Vasudev. It's the eighth child of Devaki. That's who you got to watch out for. And if you killed Vasudev, Krishna's going to run and hide. So don't kill Vasudev. Get Krishna. And I have a suggestion. The suggestion is, bring him here in the name of having a big festival in Mathura. Invite all the residents of Vrindavan. And when he comes, kill him. You're powerful. You know how to do it. Great idea. I'm going to invite Krishna to have a big festival and we'll kill him. Okay. So then Narada went to visit Krishna just after visiting Kamsa. Same day, he went to visit Krishna. You know what happened, right? Because you read Krishna book. Narada said, "Oh, Krishna," keeping it simple, he said many things. "I long to see the day when you will go to Mathura and release your mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, from the prison of Kamsa and kill Kamsa. And you have so many devotees all over the countryside, and they're feeling a lot of fear because of Kamsa and the wicked kings. And you're going to kill this one, and you're going to kill that one, and the other one, and you can have a great time. And you're going to protect the devotees. Remember, you made a promise. You made a promise to the demigods that you would relieve the burden of the earth, of the overburden of demoniac kings. I long to see that day." And Krishna said, "I'm leaving tomorrow." I mean, not exactly how the story goes, but to keep it simple. And then there's a second event that happened that's really important. And what's that other second event? It's someone came to visit Krishna. And his name is? Starts with an A. Krishna's uncle. A.K. A.K.R. A.K.R.U.R.A. That's the spelling of? Akrura. So who's Akrura? Akrura is a minister, part of the royal family, part of the Yadu dynasty, as was Kamsa, as was Nanda and Yasoda and, you know, the whole village residents in Vrindavan. They're from the Yadu dynasty, a little, you know, the same dynasty. So Akrura was very elder, very old, but he stayed when Kamsa took over because he's a devotee. And he knew that Krishna would appear. And he really wanted to see Krishna. So if you really want to see Krishna, you sometimes have to do things you don't like serve Kamsa, because he really wanted to see Krishna. So Kamsa called Akrura and said, "Guess what? I've got a plan to kill Krishna, and I need your help. You're really good. You're very skilled. You're a Yadu dynasty member. If you go to Vrindavan, figure out a way to get Krishna to come to Mathura so I can kill him." He was like really explicit, very clear. And the next day, that's what we're discussing now, is the close of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and the beginning of his Mathura pastimes. It's that little juncture. And Akrura, in the early morning, gets on this really special chariot that was arranged by Kamsa for his journey from Mathura to Vrindavan. And all the while, 22 verses, he's just meditating on meeting Krishna. Supposing you were told, sometime this evening, you're going to see Krishna. And it's for real. It's not just a story. You're going to see Krishna tonight. That sounds really nice. But if you were a pure devotee, you would be experiencing symptoms of ecstasy. And that's what happened with Akrura. It's the lesson is for us is how to anticipate meeting Krishna. In our life, we heard about Krishna. And so did Akura. He had heard about Krishna. He had never seen him. We haven't seen Krishna. But he really wanted to see Krishna. So he went through difficulties to get to the position where he could go see Krishna. And he's now on the way to go see Krishna. So that's the mood. And according to the commentaries, it explains, the commentators explain, that each of the verses is very dynamically moving from one ecstasy, is called Sanchari Bhava, to another one, to another one, to another one, because mixing of different bhavas results in prema. He has a particular relationship with Krishna. His relationship with Krishna is dasya rasa. He's a servant. Dasya. Like Grandfather Bhishma was to Krishna, was dasya rasa. Servant. But his mood of servant is right, like waves on an ocean. Some are rising way high. Some are little waves. Some are mixing with the big waves and little waves. And he's just going for a swim in an ocean of rasa. So that's where we are. And I'm going to read now two sections about the verse. The verse is 10:38:8, where Brihat Bhagavatamrita, a book written by Sanatana Goswami, he's discussing what's happening right now. So here we go. Among those expansions of Lakshmi, Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune in Vaikuntha, Lakshmi Narayan. She has expansions. Among those expansions of Lakshmi is the controlling deity of all material opulence, who has great perfections at her command. But that bestower of prosperity is utterly neglected by liberated souls, by candidates for liberation, and by devotees of the Lord. So here's the commentary. That's the verse, commentary by Sanatana Goswami. The goddess Lakshmi is glorified in many scriptures, including Srimad Bhagavatam 10:38:8. Gives the Sanskrit for the verse. The lotus feet of Krishna, this is the translation, the lotus feet of Krishna, the lotus feet of the Lord, are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas, unquote. Such statements indicate that she is more respected among the worshippers of the Supreme Lord than even the liberated sages and pure Vaishnavas. Why then is she sometimes disparaged as material and inferior? In this verse and the next, Narada answers this doubt. Paragraph. Here's the answer to that doubt. Among the many expansions of the goddess of fortune, there is one, Lakshmi, who presides over all opulences of the material world. All the residents of the universe, including the rulers of various planets, owe their powers to her. Even the mystic siddhis of yogis proceed from her. Mumukshus, that's persons striving for liberation, and muktas, persons who have already achieved it, neglect this particular form of Lakshmi because the opulences she bestows are nothing but favors for sense gratification, which to genuine mumukshus and muktas are not at all attractive. And the conclusion is, Entanglement in mundane sense gratification is the main obstacle to liberation. And this is another section altogether. This is directly quoting our verse for this morning, 10:38:8, where Kura is not speaking to anybody. He's just driving the chariot because you got to put two passengers in the car when he goes back. Balaram and Krishna. So he's just alone and he's thinking to himself, and Shukadeva Goswami knows his thoughts. He has a remote television, good surveillance system. Or something like in Bhagavad Gita, where Sanjaya, he's not on the battlefield, but he knows what's going on the battlefield as it's happening. That's kind of a mystic power that was given to him by Vyas. Prabhupada speaks of it like television. It's not television, but like television, where there's something happening in a remote place, one can see that something happening live as it's happening. No time lag. With what we're doing here, there's a camera, and both the visual and the vocal, there's a time lag because it has to pass through some medium. But the yogis, or Sanjaya, and in this case also Akura, Shukadeva Goswami, he can understand things that are happening as they're happening, remote, and even through a course of time, past, present, future equally. That's pretty good, because we don't even know present properly. So here's Akura's thoughts. Those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas. Upon those lotus feet, the Lord walks about the forest while herding the cows with his companions. And those feet are smeared with the kunkum from the gopis' breasts. Commentary. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:38:8 expresses one of the thoughts Akura had while on the road to Vrindavan. There's 22 verses. The person of whom Akura speaks, he mentions one after another in order of their increasing greatness. Were he not to mention them in this way, his praise would be as ridiculous as praise given to the same person first for being a great brahmana and then a great king. Competent poets disapprove of such awkward sequences. Such poets generally glorify related subjects in order from the least significant to the most. It's a rule for poetic composition. Not so something we can bear in mind when we're speaking or at least writing. It's standard. I mean, there can be exceptions, but from least to greater and greater. So following that rule, that Brahma and other demigods worship Krishna's lotus feet indicates that those feet are the supreme worshipable deity, that Krishna is the supreme controller, and that Krishna is the supreme controller. The goddess Lakshmi, who bestows all riches simply by her sidelong glance, also worships Krishna's feet, which indicates that Krishna's feet possess the extreme limit of good fortune. So, the demigods, the goddess of fortune, next in the list. Mystics, who are self-satisfied, Atma Rama, are indifferent to the favors of the goddess of fortune. That's this when it gives material benedictions, that expansion. Yet they also worship Krishna's lotus feet. This means that to obtain Krishna's feet is the highest goal of life. And apart from great mystics, also worshipping Krishna's feet are the devotees, interested only in pure devotional service to the Supreme Person. Such devotees are much greater than the Atmarama mystics, because pure devotees do not even care for liberation. This also implies that Krishna is the most generous giver of charity, because to such pure devotees, he gives away even his very self. Paragraph. Sages busy in the cultivation of karma and jnana have no time to worship the personality of God, his lotus feet. They lack the special knowledge that would inspire them to begin such worship. And they also lack the spiritual strength needed for devotional service. But karmi and jnani sages who associate with pure Vaishnavas can receive the Vaishnava's mercy and thus acquire requisite knowledge and strength. In other words, devotees of the Supreme Lord are superior to non-devotee sages. So, Prabhus, congratulations. By referring to the goddess of fortune, Sri, as Devi, or demigoddess, rather than Bhagavati, beloved of Bhagavan, Akura indicates that he is talking not about Lord Narayan's wife, Mahalakshmi, but about the partial expansion of Mahalakshmi who rules the opulences of the material world. You got that? He's referring to her as Devi instead of Bhagavati, the consort of Bhagavan. So that thus her expansion. Vaishnavas worship the original Mahalakshmi as the dearmost consort of the Supreme Lord, which means that the Vaishnavas accept her as greater than themselves. Paragraph. Akura contemplates Krishna going to the forest with his companions, the young cowherd boys, and in this way thinks of Krishna's absolute affection and compassion for his devotees. The forest is Vrindavan, the place of Krishna's greatest pleasure pastimes, and the purpose of his entering that forest is to tend his cows, a pastime of supreme happiness. Paragraph. It is not precisely right to think that the words Architam and Anucharai together mean worshipped by his companions. His Archana has to do with worship, and Anucharai has to do with his friends. It's worshipped by his friends or companions. That wouldn't work. There may be some grammatical justification for such an understanding, but because the cowherd boys are Krishna's intimate friends, their, quote, worship of his lotus feet differs from the worship usually indicated by the word architam, meaning the boys don't worship Krishna's feet. They play with him. So their worship is in this exalted position of playing with him because it pleases Krishna. As worship is for the pleasure of the deity being worshipped, the cowherd boys are not just worshipping. They're worshipping by playing. That's in another chapter. Another very nice section. Okay, so now comes a delicate part. Akura says that Krishna's lotus feet are smeared with kunkum from the breasts of the gopis. This not only points toward an uncommon mode of worshipping the Supreme Lord, but also indicates how Krishna sports romantically and bestows the highest form of his mercy by coming under the control of pure love. The gopis are mentioned last in this comparative sequence because they are the greatest of all of Krishna's worshippers. And the word yad is repeated a second time in the last line to highlight the special nature of their worship. The sweetness invoked by the image of Krishna's feet smeared with the gopis' kunkum suggests that his loving exchanges with the gopis are the most important purpose for which he descends as an avatar, namely, his favoring the gopis by submitting to their love is the most glorious thing he ever does. Paragraph. In this way, Akrira compares various worshippers of Krishna's lotus feet in the exactly the fitting order. So here's the sequence again. Brahma is greater than the demigods. Lord Shiva is greater than Brahma. The goddess Shri is greater than Shiva. The self-contented sages, greater even than Shri. The pure Vaishnavas, greater than the sages. And the cowherd boyfriends, and finally the gopis, are greater than all others. Thus, Akura became ecstatic. As he approached Vrindavan thinking, going to later in this chapter, 38, text 15, then I will at once alight from my chariot and bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that the great mystic yogis striving for self-realization bear within their minds. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. Nice. Then moving along. This is Jiva Goswami's commentary from Krishna Sandarbha. Krishna Sandarbha. Just a little background. Krishna Sandarbha. One of Jiva Goswami's several commentaries in the Bhagavatam is topic by topic commentary. And, they go in the category of Sambandha, for your side, Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayoja. Sambandha means relationship, right? Relationship? Sambandha. Do you know Hindi? No? It's even a Hindi word. I don't know Hindi at all, but I've been told. So, relationship. So, there's the source of everything, and there's a relationship between everything and the source of everything. That's Sambandha. And Krishna Sandarbha is the final of the Sambandha section. There's four of those. It's meaning the relationship of all things with Krishna. Number five is acting in that relationship, Bhakti Sandarbha. And then the final sixth of the six Sandarbhas is Preeti Sandarbha, the prayojan of the result of acting in that relationship with Krishna. So Krishna Sandarbha, he writes, Akura is meditating. I shall soon see Lord Krishna's lotus feet, which are worshipped by great demigods like Brahma, Narada, and Lord Shiva, which traverse the ground of Vrindavan while herding the cows with the gopas, and which touch the breasts of the gopis covered with tinges of kunkum. In these verses, the word Purve, which means formerly great sages and saintly persons, became liberated from the material world simply by seeing the shining nails of the lotus feet of Krishna. That's from the previous verse, actually. That's from text 7. And then go charanaya is I shall soon see Lord Krishna's lotus feet, which are worshipped by great demigods like Brahma, Narada, and Lord Shiva, and which traverse the ground of Vrindavan while herding the cows with the gopas, clearly indicate the eternality of the form of Lord Krishna. So it's an important objective for our acharyas, Jiva Goswami, of the form of Lord Krishna. So to make it very clear that the form of Krishna is not a material form. It's a fully spiritual form, and spiritual forms are eternal. So Krishna's eternal spiritual form is being indicated by these verses. And next, the same verse, this is the last reference from 10.38.8, is found in Chaitanya Bhagavat. What's Chaitanya Bhagavat? You've heard of Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? Yes? Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Bhagavat was written before. It's also a biography about Lord Chaitanya. And in that biography of Lord Chaitanya, the author, his name is Vrindavan Das. Nice name. Vrindavan Das Thakur. He's glorifying Lord Chaitanya and saying that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. So here's what he says. Lord Chaitanya is that same Lord Krishna, and he appeared to enjoy the pastimes of Sankirtan. Then he makes reference to the last chapter of Canto 10, Bhrigu, going to kick Krishna in the chest. You know that story? Bhrigu goes to Brahma, then Shiva, then Krishna, and he kicks Krishna in the chest. And the deity that Prabhupada brought from India, Radha Krishna deity, on the left part of Krishna's chest, there's a footprint of Bhrigu on the deity. Because Bhrigu kicked him. Left a big mark. So that's from the section. After hearing Bhrigu Muni's statement with great attention, the sages became free from doubt and concluded that Narayana is the greatest. The sages then offered their respects to Bhrigu Muni and said, "You have cleared our doubts and made our minds peaceful." Those are quotes from 10th Canto, chapter 89. Then next, all the sages then accepted the devotional service of Krishna with determination, and they faithfully worshipped Brahma and Shiva with the understanding that they are devotees. That's important, right? We offer all respects to Brahma and Shiva as devotees of Narayan. And devotional service goes to Narayan. So this is now Bhakti Siddhanta's commentary, because he wrote a commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.89.19, it is stated, quote, that's this Bhrigu story. The learned brahmanas living along the river Saraswati came to this conclusion, in order to dispel the doubts of all people. Thereafter, they rendered devotional service to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet and attained his abode. So he's pointing to them as an example of what's in our 10.38.8. What's that? Great sages worshipped the lotus feet. Those lotus feet, this is the translation, and then we're going to go on to text 9. Those lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all other demigods, by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages and Vaishnavas, like these sages that we're meeting along the river Saraswati and began worshipping the lotus feet of Krishna, convinced by what Bhrigu had taught them. Okay, now there's a short other, one more section. Text 9, translation. Surely, Akura's thinking, I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda, since the deer are now walking past me on my right. He has a sign. That face, framed by his curly hair, is beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. The BBT purport is one sentence long. Akur saw an auspicious omen, namely the passing of deer on his right, and thus felt sure he would see the Supreme Lord Krishna. Vishwanath writes, Akura confirmed that his desires would be fulfilled because of his seeing auspicious omens, such as the deer circumambulating him. Quote, therefore it is certain that I will see his face surrounded by curly locks, his lotus eyes, his glance, his beautiful cheeks and nose, and his smiling face. Akura ascertains the sure fulfillment of his desire. He thought, it is sure that I will see Krishna's smiling face, etc. Jiva Goswami's commentary. Having meditated on his lotus feet with natural dasya rasa, he then desires to see Krishna's lotus face because of greed from intense prema. We'll come back to this because of greed from intense prema. Nunam means certainly. So he's certain. He is called Mukunda because of his teeth, white like jasmine buds or kunda buds, when he slightly smiles. This name shows the special beauty of his face, Mukunda. The reason he is certain that he will see his face is because of the deer walking from left to right in front of him. Vai means it is clear. Because of the sound of the chariot, the deer were far away. Because they were not a couple, but many, mriga, it may be concluded that several black antelope were also there. In the scriptures concerning omens, it is said, here's some detail, omen details. It is said that if two gavayas go from left to right in a pleasing manner, or if golden deer, not just two, but many, go from left to right, if they are all beautiful and do not move to the left, and if they are mixed with black antelope, then there can be no evil. So, auspicious omen, some details. Now, I want to discuss a little bit what's written in Nectar Devotion about this topic of greed. Maybe you're familiar with it from Nectar Devotion. It's from chapter 9. I'm just going to read a little bit and then we'll discuss. Lalasa Mayi means desiring some perfectional stage or very eagerly desiring to go to one's natural position. This Lalasa Mayi stage of submission comes in the stage of perfect liberation. So, Akura's not coming to the stage. He's already there. He's a pure devotee. And he's a pure devotee who is experiencing greed for his object, Krishna, seeing Krishna. So that's, greed is normally a bad quality. Greed for Krishna is a good quality. If one develops lalyam, this is Prabhupada Nectar Devotion. If one develops lalyam or excessive eagerness for meeting and serving the Lord in a particular way, that is the price to enter into the kingdom of God. Otherwise, there is no material calculation for the value of the ticket by which one can enter the kingdom of God. The only price for such entrance is this lalyam lalasamayi, or desire, and great eagerness. So he's using different words. Great eagerness, excessive eagerness. The word is also sometimes used as greed, laulium, because that's what it means in material sense. And then there's spiritual. Greed. Hankering for something very intensely. So he's experiencing the motions that he's experiencing because of his intense eagerness to meet Krishna. And that's accelerating or heightening his entrance into prema. I'll just read again what Jiva Goswami writes. Having meditated on his lotus feet with natural dasya rasa, he then desired to see Krishna's lotus face because of greed from intense prema. So one can say the prema is increasing his greed, or one can say his greed is increasing his prema. They, one feeds the other. It's just like our practices of bhakti bring us closer to Krishna, and coming closer to Krishna accelerates our bhakti. It's a relationship. They go together. So we're getting, this is an important chapter, I feel, because it's giving us a picture of someone who is kind of like, you know, we can aspire to be like. He's not an eternal associate of Krishna. He's, in a different mood. And he sees Krishna, we read one of the verses, he sees Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the residents of Vrindavan don't. He shows his divinity to them in many, many ways at many different times, and their intense love is so great, they interpret it some other way, and that's nice, but he's our friend, or he's our dear son. And whether it's Nanda and Yashoda or just the other elders, it's described. They do their household duties for their families, but their meditation is always upon Krishna. They see Krishna as their son, although he's not their son. They all have that mood. That's the intensity of their love, and so forth, all the other rasas. The cows. Krishna loves the cows and the cows love Krishna. Moo. Let's go to the pasturing ground. And they look forward to being milked by Krishna, and Krishna looks forward to milking them. And there's an intimacy with the cows that's so nice. So it's instructive for us, the anticipation of meeting Krishna and the different stages of emotion and contemplation. It's not at all static. It's most dynamic. And one thing leads to the next thing. He's very spontaneous. He's not, chanting mechanically like we do. We're chanting, but you know, that's one of the chief things. How do I get beyond mechanical chanting or numerical chanting? He's not just a nice sadhaka. Who knows how many lifetimes of activities of practice brought him to the stage of love that he now has? That question is asked over and over again, but it's not. The answer is, in terms of the cowherd boys, in terms of the gopis, in terms of Nanda and Yashoda, for that matter, all the residents of Vrindavan, but it's not lifetimes of austerities or pious works. Maybe lifetimes of something else, or maybe a short period of time by intense absorption, but it takes it takes deliberate. Sadhana bhakti done properly leads to spontaneous devotional service. And there are some elements that are most helpful along the way. One of them is what we're doing right now. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam about these perfected souls and what perfected souls do. What's it like? And just meditating upon them and emulating them and becoming followers of them, that brings one to spontaneous devotional service. That's what Rupa Goswami teaches us. So Bhagavatam is for everybody. The Janata Agha folks, the sinful people. It's for the Paramahansa people, and it's for everybody else in between. Because it very gently stimulates, it cleanses and stimulates. Cleanses from the material contamination and allurements towards attraction for Krishna. The sound vibration has that quality. So one can be in any position. You don't have to necessarily know, hey, I want to get on this Raganuga Bhakti platform and let's hear some Srimad Bhagavatam. One may just be thinking something quite different. I want to know about Krishna. Because I read in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, janma karma cha me divyam. You know the verse? Evam yo veti tatvataha. You don't know that one? Janma karma cha me divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Chaktvadeham purnar janma. Naiti mameti sarjana. You're just teasing us, you know. So, just to know Krishna, purnar janma na. Not only that, mameti. So let's try to understand about Krishna. So that can be one's position. I don't want to have repeated birth and death, and I want to go to Krishna. It can be so many different other positions in the trajectory or the path of bhakti. But the end result is it draws one to that position of spontaneous loving devotion to Krishna, as the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing. And even the other sections of the Bhagavatam do the same thing, although it may not be Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. It leads one to that same position, that potency is invested in that sound vibration. So it's nice to hear. It's a long section too. Akura's contemplations before, and it gets to the point when, as he said in the verse that we read, when I see Krishna, I'm going to fall to the ground. Even before he saw Krishna's footprints in the soft sand, and he jumped out of the chariot and started rolling on the ground, touching the dust that had touched the feet of Krishna. And he was in ecstasy. Then he got back on his chariot, and then a little further he saw Krishna. Very, very, very amazing. So who knows what it's going to be like for us to see Krishna. But to see Krishna is not just, you know, get to Vrindavan or some good fortune like that. That Krishna can reveal himself to someone by his mercy at any time and any place, based upon his will and our receptivity, our eagerness. So this greed is an important one. Lalyam lalasamayi. Eager to become situated in our natural position with Krishna. It's really important. It's really important. So occurs way up there and having that qualification so we can be inspired hearing about him and then continuing with the rest. So let's see if there's some discussion. 55 minutes.
Guru Maharaj, in the context when you read where Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva is, greater than Brahma, and then Shri is greater than Lord Shiva, and then you said self-contented sages are greater than Shri. How to understand that? That is difficult for me to understand.
It's specific to that feature of Shri who bestows material opulences. And the self-contented sages have no hankering for material opulences. That's the distinction. It's not that she's in Shakti Tattva, they're Jiva Tattva, so she's in a greater position. But specific to the obstacle, because that was that one verse, the obstacle for liberation is attraction for material allurements. So these self-satisfied sages, they have no attraction for material, they're liberated already. And she is giving those things that allure people. Not because, she's rubbing her hands together thinking, I'm going to keep them caught in Maya. She is fulfilling their desire by a plan of the Lord. Okay?
Another question regarding the anticipation of Akrura, how he anticipates meeting Krishna. He is in a very high level.
Yes.
And his anticipation is, I'm thinking about me. Even if you gave a very nice example that what if Krishna is going to come today evening sometime, and it's real, and I started to think like what will I do because I'm not pure, still my anticipation is not that level.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
So we have to, or I have to become pure to get to that level.
Well, it's part of becoming pure is anticipating becoming pure.
So the anticipation, anticipating becoming pure will move me forward.
For the pleasure of Krishna, yes. Because there can be other reasons. I want recognition and so forth. There can be other. That's because that's not pure, but one may have an idea of what's pure that's not pure. So the qualifier is for the pleasure of Krishna. But yes, just adding a little footnote. Anyone else? Yes.
Maharaj, I have a couple of questions. As Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu was asking, I also noted the same question, but just an extension to that, Lord Brahma is a pure devotee, Lord Shiva is pure devotee. Naturally, when we see, all above them are pure devotees. So when it comes to the sages who are Jiva Tattvas per se, I'm just trying to understand how they are beyond Lord Shiva, and are there any gradations in the pure devotees as well?
Well, that's a nice question. Yeah. The whole of Brihat Bhagavatamrita, for that matter, part one and part two, is pursuant to that question. And the statement made by Sanatan Goswami in commentaries, they're all pure. Narada's quest is, who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy? That's the question. And they're all pure devotees, Sanatan Goswami says, but there's degrees. And, what determines the degree is your question. Why this Atmarama personalities are considered above Lord Shiva, and are there degrees? Yes, there are degrees.
Jivas.
Huh?
Sages are Jiva Tattvas, so beyond Lord Shiva.
So it's not a matter of Tattva, it's a matter of something else.
Okay.
Okay.
Next question. Yeah. Regarding Goddess Lakshmi, I have got a lot of kind of different opinions or arguments when I talk to Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya or others. They say Mother Lakshmi is just a demigod. How should I understand, you know, if it is authentic parampara, you know, she's just a demigod. Lord Brahma is chief of all the demigods. Higher than that is Lord Shiva, and higher than that is, you know, Goddess Lakshmi Devi. So I'm just confused between those two theories.
You think you have to ask them what they mean by that? She's just a demigod? Because they worship Lakshmi Narayan, and Narayan is not just a demigod.
Yes, Maharaj. I said that what they said is they don't keep Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi on the same platform. She is lower than Narayan.
Well, I'm imagining that there are different flavors amongst followers of the Sri Sampradaya, because after all, it's the Sri Sampradaya. So there are probably some that have this view and that view and the other view. You know, they certainly want to see Narayan as the source of everything, and his energy is not the source of everything. He's the source of everything. But then what's the relationship between, so I don't know. I'm sure there's different divisions amongst the followers of Sri Vaishnavism. But one of them that I can imagine is they're Vishishta Advaita. She is a Vishishta of Narayan. She's an attribute that's of Narayan, and Narayan is in this category, and the attribute is not in the same category. But, you know, they also have one of their principal sources is Vishnu Purana that speaks of, you know, three different potencies. Internal, marginal, and external potency. And she's not in the category of marginal or external. She's in the category of internal. So I don't know how they come across with that.
But still it makes a lot of sense, Maharaj, when you said Vishishta Advaitism attribute. I could probably...
But there's probably different interpretations of what that means as well over time. I mean, you'll go back to the source in Jamunacharya and Ramanujacharya, and you may not get differences. But over time, there's no surprise if there's differences.
Okay. One more thing. I was just, when I was hearing about sages, so I was just connecting from Ramayana, the great sages who want to get associated with Lord Ramachandra.
Yeah.
And Lord Ramachandra said, no, not now. Tomorrow, I mean, next pastime, yeah. You come as gopis. So, is that something?
Yeah, like that.
Like that, okay. And my another question is, Yadu dynasty, when we hear from Bhagavatam, all the Dwaraka Vasis are Yadu dynasties. So,
are they what?
Yadu dynasty.
Vidu.
Yadava
dynasty, yes.
So, how to understand, is Dwaraka people also the Yadu dynasty in that sense?
Yeah.
And Vrindavan?
Because they went from Mathura to Dwaraka. They're of the dynasty. They went from here to there, but the same dynasty.
Okay.
And Krishna transferred them personally. But it's the same people. They went from here to there.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj. There is one question which I'll ask afterwards.
Okay, fine. Anyone else? No. No. Come on, when you're in the hot seat, you're the host and hostess. You got to come up with something.
I know I'm host, but I'm still the starting stage of.
That's okay. You can ask a starting person's question. Anyway, a little pressure, but we'll back off. Anyone else? Yes, go ahead. Give her the microphone.
Why does Krishna have to be a little kid? Yeah, how about he can be big, like, and he can play?
Maybe her question is, why Lord Krishna appears very small and remains and do some pastimes? He can be big directly, right? He's God. He can.
Well, he not only
like that.
Can be big. This is a very important teaching. Listen carefully. Within Krishna is everything. So when Krishna performs his earthly pastimes, he's demonstrating part of everything, because people in this realm, they can't see everything. They can see the part of everything and the part of everything. But even while he's in his little baby 6 day old feature, he's the all powerful source of everything. Simultaneously, so it's not, it looks like for you and me, people of this world, it looks like he's passing through stages. But actually, he is everything, and those pastimes are eternally going on. This is a very important teaching that our acharyas explain. You've heard this example before. When in some place on the planet, the sun is rising, the next moment, someplace on the planet, the sun is rising, and the sun is always rising. Somewhere. Correct? So, similarly, Krishna's pastimes are eternal. Let's say it this way. When he is making his appearance in the prison house of Kamsa on the earth planet, in some other universe, he's just about to appear in the next universe, the next universe, the next universe. His appearance pastime is eternal. Even in this realm, it's eternally going on. And all of his pastime, Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, and Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, and Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, is eternal, even in this realm. And all of those pastimes are within Krishna at every stage. It's quite inconceivable, isn't it? So his little form that we see in Vrindavan, and after he leaves Vrindavan, we don't see those pastimes. Those pastimes are all within Krishna at any stage. He's in Dwarka. So time has passed, he's no longer in Vrindavan. But within Krishna and Dwarka is everything. Somewhere the pastimes of Krishna are going on, and within Krishna is everything. Simultaneously, not like there's no time lag. Time works differently in the spiritual realm than in this realm. Are you fully bewildered or are you satisfied? You have to think about it. You ask your father later. He'll explain it. Maybe in language that it'll be easier for you to understand. Anything? No? Yes.
I don't know, maybe it is sailed, I don't know. Vishnu avataras are das avataras, we say, right? I mean, avataras
of
Vishnu.
One of the categories of Vishnu avatars is das avatars, but okay. There's many others.
Yeah. Okay.
You like to hear what they are?
Yeah, of course. I mean, what I thought is, why they are confined only to the 10? People say that are das avataras.
That's just, the principal ones are 10. Mm. And how many? There's as many waves as there are waves in a river. Too many to count. And then as soon as you count them, there's more. But they're principal ones. That's das avatar. And they're celebrated because of the author that wrote about them. Jayadev. Could you lean that way? Yeah. Jayadev wrote Das Avatar Stotra. So they became celebrated in part by his writing about them. Jayadev Goswami?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You know it, in ISKCON we sing the Sringa prayers. Tava kara kamala pare nakam adbhuta shringam. Dalita hiranya kashipo tano pringam. Keshavadrita narahari rupa. So that's one, narahari. Nrisinga Dev. That's one of the ten. So he wrote those songs. They're called Das Avatar Stotra in this big work, Gita Govinda. And it's just one little part of that big work. And it's celebrating in song these ten avatars, these ten Leela avatars, principal ones, but there's unlimited. Okay. More? You got that look on your face like there's more. Okay, give her the microphone.
Why did Krishna make Vishnu like his color blue? Can't Vishnu be like another color?
Hey, can he be any other color? Sure. Sure. Sometimes, according to Rupa Goswami, in Dwarapa Yuga, the Yuga avatar is green. Don't ask me why. He wants to be green, I guess that's why. But his original form is Shyamasundara. Okay? Okay, so back behind you.
This question is from Sanchari. When he had read that statement that Krishna has absolute love for his devotees, I was reflecting on the term absolute. It's difficult to understand that there can be absolute love when I live in a relative world. And due to this, at times it feels like a transactional relationship where my one step equals Krishna stepping closer as well. When you said this, I was thinking that Krishna is already here, but I am the one choosing to move forward or stay in place.
Yes.
How do we see the absolute nature of Krishna's love as we progress on our path of bhakti?
Well, you can understand it through sound and you can experience it from the heart. Through sound, it's not just one step, it's one step, 100 steps. That's what scripture tells us. We take one step toward Krishna. We're some distance away because, if he takes 100 steps, he's still far away. But we've distanced ourselves from him. That's our problem, not his problem. And, so how do we understand that? It's just his nature. You understand it through scripture. You understand it through direct experience. His kindness is always there. Just like a child. The child may get grumpy and cry because they don't get something or something like that. And she wants to play and mommy's saying, shh. So she may think, mommy, why are you saying, shh? I want to play. But, this is not a lack of love, but the perception may be whatever the perception is. But loving exchange is absolute from Krishna's side. And it's, adjustable from our side. And he just reciprocates according to our regard for him. That's his nature. So that's what scripture says and one can realize it. Next. That's it. One more.
I got two questions from WhatsApp group.
WhatsApp group. Okay. What's up?
First question, without bhakti, is it possible? Without bhakti, is it possible to get liberated and be with Sri Krishna? in Goloka Vrindavan.
Why would you want that? Because bhakti means loving service. But why would you want to be with Krishna without loving service? If you don't want Krishna with loving service, you're wanting something else. So if you want something else, you're not going to be with Krishna in loving service. That's not even, it's a theoretical question that just bounces off a wall. It just really doesn't have any place at all. The short answer is no. Go ahead.
Second question. Is liberation and Krishna Prema two different things?
Yes. That was the short answer. Now, liberation, generally, implied by liberation is negation. Cessation of the modes of nature, cessation of the influences of karma, and the cessation of, you know, bad stuff. You know, the implication in attraction for things temporary and everything that goes along with that. So liberation is commonly thought of like that. That's called sayuja, liberation. And even, yeah, that's imperfect because it's imperfect because we're part and parcel of the Supreme, Mam Evangsa Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Eternally we're a tiny Angsa of the Supreme. So as the Supreme is joyful, we also are by nature joyful, and that's not joyful. Cessation of negative isn't joyful. Cessation of negative is cessation of negative. It's neutral. But the joyfulness is what we want because it's who we are. And so we can't stay in that so-called position of liberation that's neutral or cessation of the negative without the positive. So bhakti is the positive. And taking shelter of the positive. Within that taking shelter of the positive, subset is in the background. It's like, huh? it's a subset that's already included. But if one has that liberation, that subset, doesn't mean that one has joyfulness. The joyfulness of being situated in one's loving relationship with the source of everything. So they're different. Correct? See?
I have one more question that came up, but on the follow-up to that question, Maharaj, Prabhupada says back to Godhead. Is that the, what is the difference between that back to Godhead and Krishna Prema?
It's not different. Back to Godhead is not a place exactly. It's a consciousness. When you're Krishna conscious, you're back to Godhead. When you're back to Godhead, you're Krishna conscious. You don't have to wait for the end of this lifetime. You're with Krishna in this lifetime. That's back to Godhead. It's not in the life hereafter, you go to a nice place. You're in that nice place if you're Krishna conscious.
So the moksha that Krishna speaks in 1866, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, is back to Godhead, which is the consciousness.
Yeah. Now, different persons are going to understand different things from Krishna's words. It so happens that people do have different understandings. But the answer to your question is yes. That's what he's speaking of.
Okay. This question is from Amara Mataji. I am very fascinated with how Sri Akrura maintained his greed and enthusiasm for darshan of Lord Krishna's lotus feet, even while serving a demon like Kamsa.
Yeah.
What good association did he get while in service to Kamsa? Or he could just keep his enthusiasm by his own devotion?
Well, he prior to being in the service of Kamsa, he's from a very celebrated lineage, the Yadu dynasty, that had perfect devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he had that. Now, we don't, you know, Uddhava was also there, because Uddhava's there when Krishna goes to Mathura. So he had Uddhava's association, and who knows who else. But, you know, even one can be in a, you know, difficult situation and still be Krishna conscious just by the strength of the training and the disposition of heart and the orientation of heart to stay connected with Krishna. It's possible. It happens. What was Prabhupada's association when he came to America? Zip. But he was with his spiritual master always, in his instruction and his service and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai.
Jai.